Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Dr. Carl, a very, very good morning to you. A very, very pressing and important question. Your chocolate of choice this World Chocolate Day.
Well, it's tricky. It turns out that there are 6 different crystalline forms of chocolate. And by the law of maximum inconvenience, the form of chocolate that is the most delicious, the one that just simply melts on your tongue, is, by a terrible coincidence, the one that is almost also the most unstable. So, if it comes with a stabilizer in it, it's no good. If it comes with a preservative, it's no good. It's got to be the original chocolate, and it's got a life of maybe 2 weeks. And if you imagine the spectrum, at one end there's chocolate that's like candle wax, and it just sits on your tongue and does nothing, and you just got to chew into it like you're chewing a lump of wood. And at the other end, there's that beautiful one that just dissolves on your tongue. So the brand I normally get is something from Belgium called the Belgian Gandouja chocolate. It's flown out to Sydney, or it used to be flown out to the Sydney airport, and I'd buy it at the airport.
Amazing.
But it had a life of only a few weeks.
So that
and
makes
that's
sense.
Kind of like life. You know, life, love is for living, not for storing.
Well, that absolutely makes sense, because when I would travel a lot and when we could, I would also buy at Zurich airport some of the daily truffles, which you had to eat within I think it also was 2 weeks. Absolutely astounding chocolates.
That's right. So love is like frequent flyer points, and it's like chocolate. Have it now and enjoy it.
Absolutely right. Okay, so here's a burning science question that I need to know. Is white chocolate chocolate?
Because my daughter likes it, yes. Otherwise, I would say no. For me, chocolate
the father
has to have
slash
about,
the scientist, yeah, who's answering this question.
It has to be about 50 or 60% pure chocolate. Higher than that, it gets too nasty. And if you're putting in milk, well, you've just got milk taking up that precious chewing space in your mouth, which could be full of chocolate. It's a waste. But on the other hand, some people like it, and I respect that choice.
Look at you all liberal and fatherly in such an impressive way. One of our listeners, and I have to ask the question just because I don't know if they're having me on, about the whole world being flat business. Why is this? What is this thing? Is it real? Are people still going on about this? What is with that?
Okay, so firstly, the Greeks and the African and the Middle East scientists and the Chinese scientists had all worked out about 2,500 years ago that the world was a globe, and we have the documentation that at least the Greeks, but we don't know about the other people, had measured the diameter of the Earth as a globe accurate to within 10%, and furthermore that they had used this information to then measure the distance to the moon. Now, it was never ever thought by the educated people that the Earth was flat. That was invented in the 1800s by a writer in America, Washington Irving, and I forget the name of the writer in France, but they were giving it as an example to show, well, back then people were so primitive they thought the world was flat, but now we know that it's round. And it was never a thing that anybody thought that the Earth was flat. Today people believe the Earth is flat as part of their getting sucked into a conspiracy theory, and they join a tribe, and the tribe has the secret knowledge, and only the idiots, have you heard this word, sheeple, like
yes,
sheep,
yes, of course,
and people,
yeah,
right? Yeah, so sheep and people.
Oh, so we're
married
part
together
of the sheeple, and because we believe all this nonsense that the world is round.
That is how it has arisen. I think is part of the desire to belong to a tribe, and if your tribe believes that the Earth is flat, well, then you go along with it. But of course, it's not.
Bizarre, absolutely bizarre that these things still exist. Let's just talk, well, it's equally bizarre that my next thing that I'm going to talk to you about still exists, and that's pointy shoes. I've never really understood pointy shoes. Does anyone have feet in that shape?
Nobody has feet in their shape, and as a result, the feet get distorted by the shoes, and we've actually done a study looking at a bunch of graveyards in the United Kingdom, in a place called Cambridge, which later had the university there. And these graveyards date from about 1000 to about 1300 AD. And some of the graveyards are for poor people and some for wealthy people. Now, with regard to the poor people, when they looked at the bones, following all the guidelines with exhuming bones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, when they looked at the poor people, they had wear and tear on their feet, But that was kind of it. But as they looked into successively wealthier graveyards, they found that people had more and more bunions, B-U-N-I-O-N, which is an inflammation and damage to the toes when the shoe is narrow in some cases and it forces the big toe over the toe next to it, not lying next to it comfortably, but on top. And that's the problem with having a pointy shoe. And they got up to about 20% of the people in the wealthy graveyards in that period from 1000 to 1300 AD had bunions. And the whole thing of clothing is we suddenly draw a line between adornment, which is keeping the weather out, and fashion. And fashion is clothes and accessories and a language that harmonizes with a time and a place. And it's a social act. And in that early medieval period, clothes were statements of function and position, and you dressed according to your position. And it all got upset with the Crusades when Europe decided to invade the Middle East, beginning with the First Crusade, 1095. And they came across these people in the Middle East who dressed in absolutely gorgeous clothes of and fabrics of incredible complexity. And in fact, in Egypt, silk was a stable currency with a fixed exchange rate. And if you were a merchant, you could buy and sell stuff with silk instead of gold. And coming back from the Middle East was that fashion for the pointy shoes, proving that you didn't have to work like the common people. Otherwise, you'd have common, ordinary shoes.
So it was a statement about wealth, because you couldn't practically work in that. And therefore, if you were wearing that item, it meant that you couldn't be of that lower level.
That's right. You were different and superior. And in fact, in the Middle East, it turned out that the highest honor that you could get was that of investiture, which today has a different meaning. Today, investiture is the bosses come to you and say, Howard, you are a fabulous person. We invest you with the position of being a radio announcer. But back then, it was the ceremonial reclothing of a person in special garments. And if that person was very highly rated, they would get to wear the clothes of the leader of that country. And so they'd say, Howard, you are now the radio announcer for Chai FM and you get to wear the clothes of the boss, Fiona.
Okay. Very interesting.
And the ceremony was called Killa, K-H-I-L-A, which turned into the English word of...
Interesting. Love this type of thing. Let's talk as well, now that we spoke about the flat earth potentially, as we go up into space, we look back and we see actually what shape it might or might not be. Space tourism, I mean, this race is now kicking off this month, isn't it?
This very month. Mm-hmm. We'll have two multi-billionaires actually flying with their own bodies on the initial flights into not orbit, but sub-orbit. Orbit, you're 400 kilometers up, you're traveling around the Earth at 7 kilometers per second, and you appear to be floating because you're always falling and the Earth is always curving away from you. They're not doing that. Elon Musk is going to do that. He will offer paying passengers flights to the International Space Station later this year. But the trouble is that to get into that situation where you're doing 7 kilometers per second horizontally takes 30 times more energy than to just do a simple up-down. And so we have the two other billionaires of Richard Branson, Virgin, and Jeff Bezos, Amazon, doing their suborbital up-down flights for about 10 minutes in microgravity to the edge of space, 80 to 100 kilometers. And so Jeff Bezos has been doing this since about 2003, and his craft has done about 13 safe landings. And the capsule where the people are in, that doesn't land backwards, but rather it has a parachute that opens and they just drop down with the parachute. And he said, I'm going to do it on July the 20th to celebrate the first man on the moon, the first person on the moon, which happened on the 20th of July. And 3 hours later, totally by a coincidence, according to Richard Branson, or Dickie, as I call him, having done a couple of gigs with him, he said, oh, well, we're going to do it on July the 11th. And he's going to go up in a quite different craft, and we'll see what happens. Part of the problem is that they're dealing with enormous energies. There's a lot of energy in rocket fuel. And
oh, we're not talking about the egos of all of them. No, no, we're talking about the rocket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the rocket itself failing, because if you look at the Russian Soyuz and the American space shuttle, they blew up and everybody died roughly once in every 50, once in every 70 missions.
Right. Just explain the difference between orbit and suborbit.
Suborbit, you just go up 100 kilometers and then you hang around for a few minutes. Or you don't hang around, you just sort of go up and then you come down and you're back on the ground in about half an hour or something.
Oh, I
Whereas
see. So you're not
orbit.
So, but you're not circling the Earth at that point.
No, that's right.
Orbit.
And it's easy to get into space, but it's hard to stay there. And the only way you can stay there is by doing 7 kilometers per second horizontally.
Okay, now I understand. I learn an incredible amount these Wednesdays, and I absolutely love them. It is where we do have to leave you. Dr. Carl, thank you as always for your wisdom and your information. We look forward to chatting to you next week.